Okay, thanks. And good morning, everyone. As yesterday, I'm going to start to review a little bit what we explained yesterday, and then move on the program. So I share the screen. This one. So I hope you can see the screen. So yesterday, what we discussed is was a slightly different definition of the Wasserstein space, now defined in terms of coupling pi between two measures m and n prime, and the p distance on the Wasserstein space of measure which have a p finite order moment was defined in this way. And we have briefly explained that it is a distance. And something that we will use today is also that it can be expressed in terms of random variable in the following way. So if you want to compute the distance between two measures, and if you have the realization of these measures in terms of random variable, and you just need to compute this kind of distance, okay? So we will use that in a moment. I also explained how to, why this distance was related with the original definition for, in the case of p equal one, okay? Well, and we explained through the Sion's min-max theorem that these two definitions were exactly the same. So, okay, and then we introduced, we changed subject and we went to the notion of differential calculus in the space of measure. And here we restrict ourselves to p equal two, but in fact, this can be done in more generality. I think that most of the literature is written for p equal two for reasons that I don't have really time to explain. And I introduced two notions of derivatives. The first one, which is the naive one, which looks at the space of probability measure as a convex space, and to do there we did linear displacement. Okay, displacement. So we just look at the convex combination, and we say that a function has a L2 derivative that is denoted by delta U over delta M. If you take two measures m prime and m, u of m prime minus u of m can be computed at the integral of the derivative, and the derivative is computed along the path, the straight line between m prime and m. Okay? So you have this kind of formula, and which I've seen, for instance, that this works. I mean, this makes sense for linear function of m, or for quadratic function of M, where we're able to compute the derivative. But it turns out that this derivative is not too good. It's extremely good to make computation. And in fact, in the book with François Delarue, Jean-Michel Lasserie, Lasserie-Lyons on midfield game, we used a lot this kind of expression in order to compute explicitly the derivative. However, the one which is most useful and for which we have formulas, as we will see later, is the notion of intrinsic derivative, which consists essentially in taking so du over dn depends on m and on an extra variable, okay? And the if you want, in terms of formula, the intrinsic derivative just consists in taking the gradient of delta u over delta m with respect to this extra variable. Okay? So it's a And we assume that this quantity C1 is a continuous in measure and in the variable M and the variable Y. And we have seen formulas, okay? So for instance, when in the case where U is linear in M, then dm is the gradient of phi, where phi is integrant, okay? Respect to y. So as usual, as all linear functions, the derivative does not depend on m, okay, but it has this strange, a little bit strange structure, okay. So, and we have this the same for quadratic expression of m, the u of m equal phi m of dx m of dy. And then we have moved to write a little bit formulas by doing other motion in the space of measure. So the most natural one is a displacement in the direction of a vector field. So I take a vector field phi, okay, on Rd. So remember that we are here, the base space is Rd. And we looked at the displacement of m in the direction of phi. So we move a little bit m, h being small, a small real number, in the direction phi. Okay, and so I remind you this notation, which is image of m by the map identity plus h phi. Okay, and we have seen that what you get is in fact this expression, the integral of the intrinsic derivative of u. Computed, so the dot here, I forgot to say probably. So this is a vector in Rd, phi is also a vector in Rd, and the dot here is a scalar product, okay? So it's the integral of the scalar product between dm and u and phi. Okay? And this you integrate against m. And this formula will play a strong role in what we are going to see in a moment. So in order to also explain in a different way the notion of derivative, what we have studied is the projection of a finite dimensional space of a function defined on the space of probability measure. So if you take a function defined on the space of probability measure, and you take an integer, non-zero integer, you can look at un, which is somehow the restriction of u to the empirical measure of size n, of size capital N. Okay, so it gives you a map from Rd to the power n to R, which to n tuple x capital N, each xi being in Rd, associates the function, the image by u of the empirical measure associated with this n tuple. Okay, so this empirical measure is defined this way. And we have seen that if u is has an intrinsic derivative, then un, so this function, which is now defined, is a classical function, okay, defined on linear space. This function is C1, is this space, and you have a relation between the two. And it's a nice but not too difficult exercise to try to understand conversely what's going on. If you assume that you have some kind of compatibility between if you have a function defined on big space, okay, a sequence of function defined on big space, what kind of condition you can ask on this sequence of function and its their derivative in order to have a C1 function, a function nu at the end, okay, at the limit, which has an intrinsic derivative. So I said yesterday that I would prove this result today. In fact, I won't do it because it's a relatively simple exercise and skipping the proof will save me a little bit of time. So you can look at the proof of this proposition as a nice exercise and you have the solution in the notes in the course. Okay, so today we will complete this program of investigating the notion of derivative in the space of measure by two aspects. The first one will be what happens when one lifts the function capital U, a function U defined on space of measure, to the space of random variables. Okay, remember that there is a kind of relation between measure and random variables on the base space. Okay, so we will play with that to see that how this kind of derivative, so the intrinsic derivative, which is here, is related to the Fréchet derivative in the space of random variable. So this will be the first part. And then we will study Itô's formula for this kind of function. So I will be more precise in a moment. So let me start a new file now. Please. Okay, I hope you can see what I write.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So lifting to the space of random variable. So I'm still in this chapter where we study the derivative of function defined on space of measure. And I want to study the lifting to space of random variable. Okay, so I consider as before a function u, which is defined on P2 of RD that usually I denote by P2. Okay, so this is a set of probability measures on RD, which have a finite second order moment and which is endowed with a D2 via Schein distance. It turns out that I can represent measure on this space by random variable on RD. Okay, so the idea is to introduce a set L2 of omega with values in RD. So the set of sorry. So I will okay, I was a little bit fast. So I consider a function like that. I fix space omega fp probability space as before. And I denote by L2 the set of random variables, so depending on omega, with values in RD. Okay, and the law of any random variable here is an element of P2 of RT. Okay, so there is an obvious remark, which is that if I take X in L2, then the law of X belongs to P2. Okay. And conversely, if I take a measure in P2, okay, I can find a random variable in L2 such that it's low. So this is the law of X. It's low is equal to this measure. And now what I want to do is to, so you can see that L2 has a much better structure than P2. So P2 is just a convex space endowed with a metric, okay, for which I didn't talk about that, but it's complete. But L2 is much better. It's a Hilbert space, okay? So it's much tempting to look at function on L2 instead of looking at function on P2, okay? So let me point this out that L2, this is a Hilbert space for the usual norm. And in particular, we can do differential calculus on L2. Okay. So now I introduce the notation that we will use. So I denote by U tilde, so given U, I denote by U tilde of X, the image, the image by U of the law of X, okay, so for any X in L2. So given the function U defined on P2, I can extend it somehow to L2 by this relation, okay? And the question is, what is the relation between the regularity of U and the regularity of U tilde? So it's a nice, simple exercise to show that U continuous so for the D2 topology, okay, implies that U tilde is continuous. And now what I'm going to say What I'm going to say is about differentiability. So now, what can we say about the Fréchet differentiability? Now, I remind you that L2 is a Hilbert space, so you can talk about Fréchet differentiability. What can you say about Fréchet differentiability of U tilde, given some differentiability of U? Okay, so there is a theorem, which is mainly due to Lyons. Somehow it has been precise recently by, so this goes back to the 2010 about, and this has been precise by Gongbo and Tudorescu, sorry, very recently, I don't know, I mean, 2020 or something, about the link between the differentiability of U tilde and the differentiability of U. What happens is that U has an intrinsic derivative, so in the sense I gave before, so it's kind of C1 regularity, okay? Remember that I always assume that the derivative is continuous. If and only if U tilde is C1, with a bounded derivative, and in this case, there is a very nice relationship between the derivatives. So remember, you are in a Hilbert space, so you can talk about gradients of U tilde. Okay, and in this case, the gradient of U tilde, so if one of the two, so if U has an intrinsic derivative, for instance, the gradient of U tilde computed at some random variable x is nothing but the intrinsic derivative of U computed, so remember it has two variables, okay, computed at the low of x and at x. So I won't explain that because it would take too much time, but it explains how to do a computation on, to manipulate the space of measure as if it was a linear space, but now a space of random variable. Okay. So let me show you an example how it works, and let me show you the limit of this kind of expression also.
I have a short question. Do you need that this L2 space is, the probability space is somehow separable, that this new L2 space is separable as well?
RD is separable, so there is no issue, right?
But if that L2, if you have...
The L2 is separable because RD is separable.
But this omega FP, if you have...
This is an endromless... So typically, omega is 0, 1, and...
Okay, so there's no problem if this omega is very complicated or it's very...
We always assume that it's atomless probability space, so it has to be a standard probability space, if you like. Huh?
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure. So, of course, if omega was, it would be true if omega was zero, zero, comma one. Okay, so of course you need a rich structure on omega so that for it works, and not too rich also. So the good point of this remark, and in the C1 case this was really proved by Lyons, and in fact you can have a notion of pointwise derivative Okay, and what Gambo and Tudorescu proved is that there is this equivalence remains for point wide derivatives. So here I'm assuming much more. I'm assuming that the derivative exists and is continuous. Okay, but you don't need exactly this kind of property to have this relation. Okay, so what this formula tells you is that because u tilde is a function depending only on the law of x, okay, its gradient is a measurable function of x because it's a deterministic function of the random variable x, okay, and it has this very specific structure. It's a delicate result, but again, I don't have time to give the proof. There is some sketch of proof, not completely complete, in the notes, and you can and the proof in Gambo Tudorescu is a. You can find it in this paper. I give the reference, but it's really intricate. So let me give you examples, and we just stick to example here. So the first one is relatively. So I'm always giving the same examples. Okay. So the first one is relatively transparent. It's a case where u of m is linear, so it's the integral of some function phi of x, which is given m of dx. Okay, so you can see that in this case, so this is defined for any m in P2, and here I'm assuming that phi is C1 with a bounded and bounded derivative. Okay, so it's easy to see what is u tilde of x. I'm sure that you can see that. You need to transform that, so you need to say that this is the integral of rd of phi of x, the law of x dx, okay, which is nothing but the expectation of phi of x. Okay, so now to take the gradient of that object, you see easily, so you take, this implies that if you want to compute the gradient of that, you look at the differential, the directional derivative. Okay, so you can look, for instance, at the limit as h goes to zero of u tilde of x plus hy. So where y is a, so here x is a random variable which is square with values in Rd and which is which has a which has a finite L2 norm. Okay, so if I do here, so if I want to compute the directional derivative of u tilde, what I do is that I look at this quantity, and this is nothing but the limit as h goes to zero as the expectation of phi of x plus hy minus phi of x of h, and this is a simple exercise to see that you get the expectation. So here I'm in Rd, so I need to be a bit careful, but this is just the gradient. So when the gradient is the Rd, I call it capital D of phi of x, scalar product in Rd with y. Okay. So in other words, this is nothing but the scalar product in L2 of d phi of x with y. So in L2. Okay. So in other words, what it says is that the gradient of u tilde at x is precisely the gradient of phi at x. Okay, so if you remember this one, the intrinsic derivative of capital U, and so this makes sense in this case. This is dm of U computed at the law of x, which does not appear because and computed at x. So this works in this case. So in the linear case, I mean, in case where U is linear, it's completely transparent and it's completely obvious. Now I'm going to go to the quadratic setting, and you will see that it is not is not completely straightforward. If you have any questions there, you can please do ask. So let me go to the quadratic setting. So I show you this example because it explains that going to the space of random variable is not as transparent and easy that, as it would seem. So it's not too good to make computation, in fact. Okay, so in the case, the quadratic case, what we have seen in the case where phi now is defined on R2D, okay, with x and y in RD. Sorry. So here we are. Oop. So this is quadratic in M, okay. And we have seen what we have seen is that the derivative of u in M is given by the integral of RD of phi, oh, sorry, up. So this we have seen already. So this is the gradient in respect to the first variable x, y. Sorry, and it would be more convenient to put t1 and the gradient with respect to the second variable y x or integrated against m of x. Okay, now I want to leave this function to the space of random variable. So u tilde m should be u tilde of x, now x is a random variable, should be u of the law of x. Okay, so I don't know if you see how one can express that in terms of phi. And in fact, it's not straightforward. Okay, so what is certainly not the case, as you could perhaps guess, it's not phi of x of x, because this one would just be m of phi xx m of dx. Okay.
Pierre, I have a question. This is u of u. On the right-hand side, this phi depends on u and y. And so what is the, you integrate out that u, or what is it? I don't understand the second line.
Which line? I'm sorry.
That one. So there is capital U of U, or is it?
Capital U of, where is it? Capital U. Here?
Yes.
No, it's capital U of M.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Sorry, it's not a U. It's a function of the measure. And, my writing is not too good. So this is a definition, okay? And
yes,
phi.
Yes. I was confused about the U. Okay.
No, I'm sorry. So this function is a quadratic function of M, and here it's supposed to be a M, and here it's supposed to be 2M. So my writing is not too good in general, but now with Zoom, it's really terrible because there is this time lag. So it takes 1 second to write M, so 1 second is long. Okay, I hope it's readable.
No, everything is fine. Thank you.
Okay, so then du of my is given by this formula, which, as we have seen yesterday. Okay, now I would like to compute. So this is dm, the intrinsic derivative of u. And now at this stage, I would like to lift the function u to the set of random variables. Okay, so now x is a random variable in L2. And I'm wondering how we can write that and how we can compute the gradient. So to recover this kind of formula. And what I was saying is that it's not that obvious, because because one thing you can notice is that this quantity is certainly not the expectation of phi of xx, okay? Because expectation of phi of xx would be the integral over phi of xx m of dx, okay, and certainly not that. So here we have in fact two independent copies of the law of m, okay? So what it should be, the expectation of two independent copies, if you want to write it in terms of random variable, it should be the expectation of x and x tilde, where x and x tilde are two independent copies of x, okay? And so, and here I'm integrating against independent probability space, or if you like, I stay on the same probability space, but I take two independent copies of the same random variable, of the random variable x, okay, with some same law, but they are independent. And so the computation of the gradient of U tilde is not obvious at all. I won't make it, it's made on the notes, but it's a little bit ugly. And so this shows that the lifting to the space of random variable is extremely useful in a theoretical point of view, but in computational point of view, it might be very, very much misleading. Okay, so I stop here for this remark on the lifting on the space. We perhaps come back at the very end if I have time to talk about viscosity solution, but I'm not sure I will be. And now what I want to do is to compute, to proceed with this computation by going to Itô's formula. So we are still in the same chapter where we learn how to manipulate derivatives in the space of measures. And now I'm looking at slightly more complicated object. By looking at the Itô process. Okay, so I was told by Stefan that you all knew about Brownian motion. So I will take it for granted. And I will say a few words about, so I'll take it for granted, and I'll take it also for granted that you know about Itô processes, I hope. So my goal here is to compute the function capital U along the law of an Itô process, okay? So, and to try to understand how it behaves. So it's kind of generalization of Itô's formula. Okay, so please, if you don't know this, tell me quickly, okay? So I fix BT. Non negative, which is a d-dimensional on a motion. So if you have seen Brownian motion in one dimension, okay, it's just the copy of n d independent Brownian motion, one for each coordinate. Okay, so that's relatively easy. And I fix, so I suppose that it's defined on omega fp, omega fp, and I assume that, okay, there is a question?
No, I just put in the chat the message. If there's a problem with the pre-knowledge, they should send it to Kristel, to me, or to you, so that we
know. Yeah, sure. And even from the beginning, I can go a little bit slower if needed. Okay. Yes. And I call FT the canonical filtration associated with BT. Okay. And I always work in this filtration. So the filtration generating. So it plays basically at the level I'm going to talk about, it plays virtually no role. So it's completed by the set of zero probability. Okay. So this is the usual setting, and so now I'm going to take two processes. So I'm going to fix two processes, which are at so let BT. So it's d-dimensional process and sigma t, which is d times d-dimensional process, okay? So progressively measurable process. Such that. So I'm assuming some condition on their moments. So the integral of 0 to t. So remember, this one is d-dimensional. Okay, so this is the usual norm in RD. And sigma is d times d-dimensional, so it's a matrix. It's a square matrix, okay? And this is the norm in the space of square matrix. I'm assuming this is finite for it. And we look at the process. So this will be the drift, and this will be the volatility of the process capital X of t, which is given by some point X naught in RD, which is fixed, plus the integral between 0 and t of E of S ES. Okay, so this you know, and necessarily, and this I hope you know. Okay, so this is a stochastic integral of sigma of S against BS. Okay, so this is a random object which is adapted to the filtration FT. Okay, and the only thing I really use is the fact that this integral is an isometry in the sense that if I take the expectation of that quantity to the square, this is nothing but the expectation of this integral. Okay. So you have, so this is an elliptic process which has continuous path as the point of motion. B is called this drift. Okay, so this is a kind of deterministic part. It's a part which has it's bounded variation, and this part has an unbounded variation unless sigma is degenerate. Okay, and somehow it's a kind of torsion of the point of motion, if you like. Okay, but I hope you know more or less all this stuff. Okay. And the question is, what I want to understand is what happens if I compute a function capital U defined on the space of probability measure along the path, or along the law of X. Okay, so. So how do we compute this kind of stuff? Okay. So before doing that, I need to remind you Itô's formula. Okay, so what do you know about a deterministic function of x of t? So you probably know this kind of stuff. This is called Itô's formula. So the standard one, which says that if you take a test function phi, which is in RD, which goes from RD to R, for instance, which is a C2 with bounded derivative, okay, then one can compute phi of x as phi of x naught plus the integral between 0 and t of the gradient. So remember, the gradient I call it when it's an element in RD, I call it always d, capital D. Okay. So this is a scalar product with dBs plus a half. So this is Itô terms. A half of sigma sigma star, so sigma star is a transpose of sigma x of s, computed at the second order derivative, so the Hessian matrix of phi, so this is now the drift becomes this quantity, okay, and the random term, the martingale term, it's just sigma star x of s d phi of x of s scalar x. Okay, so you have this kind of transform. So what is new compared to the standard computation in the classical differential calculus is this Itô term. So it shows that in fact, this term has unbounded variation, okay, and the impact is here, okay. Here's the scalar product. So I don't know if you are familiar with that, and but this will play a very important role in the future. Okay. So what we will do next is to assume that. So the kind of proposition I'm going to discuss after the break is the following. If you have u, which is a function defined on the space of probability measure with values in RD, okay, then, so plus some condition, then we can compute capital U of the law of x of t equal some integral formula, and okay, and it would be and we will see that this integral formula involves the derivative, the intrinsic derivative of the function phi. Okay. So I will complete this picture after. Okay, I'll stop here. If you have any question. Okay, so let me.
I think there's a question in the chat. Would you explain the second term in the integral?
So the second term is called Itô terms. So typically, let me make it a little bit simpler. Let's work in dimension one. So capital D, small d is equal to one, and when sigma is the identity. Okay, then in this case, this quantity here just reduces to the second order derivative of phi. Okay, so it's a term which appears because, the theory of stochastic calculus. Okay, because this term, so if sigma is identity and d is equal to one, then this term is just bt. Okay, it's the Brownian motion. It's reduced to the Brownian motion. You're integrating the Brownian motion, the derivative of the Brownian motion, so it's a Brownian motion. Okay, and when you expand phi of xt, it turns out that because the Brownian motion has infinite unbounded variation, okay, so to speak, then you have here the second order derivative of phi, which pops up with a 1/2 in front. So I really don't have time to explain more in details why this kind of term pops up. Now, if the question is just in this setting. Now, I can also explain, I have to explain a little bit more carefully in the d-dimensional case, what happens. So in the d-dimensional case, d to phi is the Hessian matrix of phi, so it's d times d symmetric matrix, okay, and it's multiplied by the product of sigma of xs, sigma star of xs, which is a square matrix, okay, so it's a product of two square matrices now, okay, so it's d times d in matrix, and the symbol here is a trace, so it's the sum of the diagonal terms, okay, as you know. I hope it answers a little bit the question. I really cannot explain why you have a second order derivative which pops up because it's the basis of little calculus and it would take a little bit too much time to explain. But I hope the explanation for the d-dimensional terms answers the question.
Yeah. The chat says, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
If you have any other questions, please do ask. Okay, so we'll resume in 15 minutes or so.